Hey guys, my name is Casey.
And I'm Daniel.
And we're a married couple who recently started a true crime podcast called Dancy True Crime. That's D-A-N-S-I, True Crime.
I enjoy myself some true crime, so we hope you do too. Come on over and check us out.
We can't wait to see you guys there.
We take turns on who tells the story every week. Our episodes are posted every Monday at 12 p.m. Central Standard Time.
To subscribe or follow, check us out on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and Stitcher.
Oh, don't worry, guys. We have a couple other places here. We are also available on Facebook, TikTok, and the Instagram.
Our podcast is for mature audiences only. See you guys soon. Bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, I just want to remind you to follow our Facebook page, join our group. It is Dancy True Crime. That is D-A-N-S-I, True Crime. And also, you can hear us on Anchor or Spotify. Please rate us and subscribe or follow and share our episodes. Message us on Facebook. Let us know what you think, what we could change, what we could do better. Do you have anything you want to add, babe?
No, I think you did it. You said it just perfect, so.
All right. Well, we hope you guys have a fantastic week and that you enjoy today's episode.
We'll see you next week, guys.
Bye. Hey guys, Casey here. I just wanted to remind you that if you want to see our research links or photos that we have, they will be posted on our Facebook page. They are posted at the same time as our podcast on Anchor and Spotify. That is every Monday at 12 p.m. Central Standard Time. So we hope to see you guys there. Warning, the following is intended for mature audiences only. Viewer discretion is advised. Hey guys, I'm Casey.
I'm Daniel.
And we are Dancy True Crime. How was your week, Daniel?
It was good.
Good.
It was, oh gosh, it was busy, but I got it all caught up. Yeah. So how was your week?
It was interesting.
Yeah.
I had a long week at work and I love my job, so.
There you go.
It was fun.
Awesome. So, good weekend too?
It's been a decent weekend. We have had no kids all weekend. It's been a nice little break.
Nice date weekend. Went out to the mall, did a little window shopping.
And a little regular shopping.
Yes, we did, but things we definitely needed to get. So
yeah, we never get to have time with just us, and we never get to go shopping, so yes. We had a lot of fun with it.
Right, don't get us wrong. We love the kids, but, you know,
sometimes parents, you need a break.
Yes, you do. So, but yeah, it's been a good week. I know this next week going to be just as busy. Got a lot going on.
Oh, yeah.
But, so, you know, spring's right around the corner.
I cannot wait.
I know.
It's supposed to be raining all week, and I'm not too happy about that because I just want the sunshine.
I thought it was supposed to be sunshiny.
No, it's supposed to rain like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So it's going to be a long, rainy week. So we're waiting for the dry time to come so we can get our fence up.
Yes.
So. Oh. But anyway.
All right. Well,
let's jump into today's case.
Okay. Well, who are we talking about?
So today we are talking about what happened for 44 days with the 17-year-old Junko Furuta.
Okay.
So Junko was born on January 18th of 1971. So she was born the day before your birthday, only a long time before that, like 16 years prior.
Yeah.
So this story takes place in Misato, Japan. So we're back over in Japan.
All right.
That's where she attended high school, and she had really, really good grades. She was really overall good student. She was popular. She was attractive, and she loved people giving her attention. I mean, many people were jealous of her just because of how beautiful and incredibly smart she was. I mean, she was going somewhere with her life. She was going to have a successful life.
Now, do you know if she had like honor rolls or like,
I mean, it didn't necessarily say, it just said that she had really good grades and okay. Was going somewhere. So
very cool.
She did not smoke. She didn't drink. She didn't do drugs. Like, she was a straight edge, you know, she was a great overall teenager.
Mind focused and just
right.
Good.
So she was like the pretty much poster child of what a perfect teen is.
Okay.
And that made some of her peers not like her, because a lot of her peers were into the smoking and drinking and drugs and stuff. Those people who did that just really didn't like her. So moving on, Hiroshi Miyano had a crush on her, but she wasn't looking for a relationship, so she turned him down. So, shit, I fucked that up. Hiroshi Miyano had a crush on her, but he wasn't looking for a relationship, and neither was she, so she turned him down. And he was, like, the bully of the school and involved in all, like, the new generations of the Yakuza.
Okay.
So the Yakuza was like an umbrella team for many infamous Japanese mafia organizations that existed since the 19th century. They lead a criminal lifestyle typical of the gangs. In that instance, nobody ever dared to oppose him or tell him no until she had the nerve to just tell him no.
Okay.
And that's where our story begins, because that's why they chose her, pretty much. So when this happened, it was 2 months away from her 18th birthday. So we are at November 25th of 1988.
Okay.
Around 8:30 p.m., there were four boys who noticed Junko Furuto on her bicycle. At the time, she was on the way home from her job, and Minato kicked Furuta off her bike to create a diversion. And then Minato and Miyano, those are two different people, stepped in pretending to be an innocent and concerned bystander and helped her up, and he asked her if she wanted an escort home, to which she accepted, you know, kind of. She didn't want to, but at that point, she was just like, yeah, get me home. Now, you know, I just want to go home.
Now, were these boys from her school or just?
Yeah.
Okay.
Miyano led Furuta into an abandoned warehouse where he told her of his Yakuza connections, and then he raped her, threatening to kill her and her family if she made a sound, which is when he then took her to a park where Minato, Ogura, and Watanabe were waiting. There, the other boys also raped her, and then they smuggled her into a home that was owned by Minato's family. Now, before we get, like, really, really into the story, I want to tell you that if you cannot handle torture, like, I'm talking severe torture, just, I wouldn't even listen to this episode, because that's literally, this is a very, very hard episode, and what they put that girl through, just, it's awful.
And you said for 45 days?
44 right? days.
44 days.
So, where they took her to was to one of the parents' homes in the Ayase district of Adachi, Tokyo. And again, these are obviously all Japanese names, so if I mess them up, I am so sorry. It is very, you know, they obviously have a completely different language, and it just, some of these names are really hard to pronounce.
Yes.
So, but obviously they were all kids, so they didn't have their own homes. They took them to one, they took her to one of their houses, and you know, where their parents lived. So while in captivity, the kidnappers forced Junko to call her parents and tell them that she'd run away and she's going to stay with a friend, and insist that she's not in danger, because at this point, the parents had reported her missing. So they made her call and tell them, hey, I'm fine, I'm safe, but I'm not coming home.
Yeah.
And she was 17, so nobody was looking for her after that. She wasn't able to realize what was coming and was really scared, and so she just remained compliant with what they told her to do. Again, she called, nobody was looking for her. Parents of Minato which are the ones who own the house that she was actually held captive in for the 44 days. They came in and visited their son on a few occasions, and they made her pretend to be his girlfriend, and obviously she complied because she was still under a threat of the increased violence, and it was just going to continue to get worse.
Right.
And she was terrified because these boys were associated with this well-known gang that, you know, she was so scared for her life, which, I mean, being kidnapped in the first place, yeah, you're going to be scared for your life.
Right.
So, and she'd already been raped multiple times at that point. They still did nothing for her because they were terrified of their own son.
Oh my gosh.
So they did nothing for her. They did nothing to help her. They just let it happen in their home. Junko was humiliated and kept naked at most times. This is where it gets hard, guys, okay? I'm just letting you know. This is your final warning. If you don't want to listen to it, I'm about to list off multiple things that had happened to her in her time of captivity. And this is a very, very, very hard episode to do the research that I did, let alone, you know, saying it, and you guys listening, you know, you guys might not be able to stomach it. It was really hard for me as well. So just be prepared. She was raped in every way possible, vaginal, anal, and oral. It was believed that over 100 men had raped her during her captivity. Now, this is different men. And nobody came forward. The captor with Yakuza connections had invited other Yakuza members to have a go at the 17-year-old. She was estimated to have gone through about 500 rapes in total. And this is by, you know, 100-plus different men. So at one point, she had been raped by 12 different men in one day.
That is just,
mind you, this was only over 44 days.
That is just, yeah.
Here are some of the other things that she endured during captivity. She went through physical beatings, including hits with golf clubs and bashing her face against cement flooring. The 100 men who are believed to have raped her had also enjoyed urinating on her.
What the
heck? So after they did what they did to her, they peed on her.
See, this, I know this is not the first time we've heard about this kind of stuff happening.
Yeah, but the fact that nobody stepped up, right, nobody did anything to help her. Frequently, to turn her rapist on, she was forced to masturbate in front of them and their guests. So she was just flat out sexually humiliated. Grilled chicken skewers and so on. Yeah, and it was said that some of the grilled chicken skewers had the chicken on it still, too. Like I said, this is a very hard case. Like, just imagining what that poor child...
I can't even imagine.
She's a child. Imagine, like, just... Could you imagine even...
Not even...
The thought of it is just absolutely terrifying. And I mean, she was only provided with a limited supply of food and water. So they rationed her out and barely let her eat or drink anything, basically enough to keep her alive. At which point she was forced to eat live cockroaches and drink her own urine. Like inhumane. I said, this is exactly. It's inhumane and it's terrifying to know that humans did this to her.
Right.
Humans have the capabilities to do stuff like this. It's just terrifying. She also had fireworks forced in her anal cavity, and they set them off, causing severe burns to her buttocks. She was stabbed with sewing needles in her chest, and they even ripped her left nipple off with pliers.
All right, I got a quick question, because more and more we're coming across when there's the woman as the victims. Why is it that they're always going after the nipples, or they're cutting off the breast?
Is or it just severely biting them? I don't know.
Is it just something?
It's something
psychological.
I'd like to think that, you know, that it was something psychologically wrong with them.
Right. Is it just something?
And not just oh, well, this looks like fun. Let's do it.
Right.
But I mean, to me, you're psychologically messed up in the head if you're going to rip somebody's nipple off with pliers, though. You are messed up in the head. Yeah. I'm sorry. Not sorry. She had dumbbells dropped on her stomach while she was lying on the floor with her hands and feet tied up. And that resulted in a loss of bowel control. So she could no longer hold in her bowels.
If she had to go, that was it.
Yeah. There was no stopping that. They even hung her from the ceiling and used her as a boxing bag because at this point they were getting bored with her.
So they wanted to start beating her. But no, you're just going to continue to have your way, have your fun with this poor girl.
Yeah.
If you're getting bored with her.
So she was from time to time kept in a freezer for several hours. Her breasts were pierced with sewing needles. She also had her vagina and clitoris burnt with cigarettes and lighters. There was a hot light bulb that was inserted into her vagina and rubbed it around until it exploded inside of her.
No.
Yes. They put glass bottles in her anal cavity and her vagina and would sit there and repeatedly hit her until they would break and shatter while inside of her.
So then at this point, does it say how much scarring, bruising, or just like, was there any pictures to kind of give a little bit of a...
There were not.
I know that's, they got to protect the victim. I understand that, but it's just, I can't even fathom all that, but it's just, she was...
Well, just wait for it, because what they did to her, just, it blows my mind how humanity can do that. You know, I mean, just the things that they did to her just are not okay. On any aspect, I don't care what's wrong with you. You don't do these things to anybody.
Throughout this, it's still the same 100 guys, or is it?
Wow. I don't consider that fun. No. I consider that absolutely terrifying. And the fact that they all felt that it was okay. Yeah, no. There's... So.
Okay.
So while she was only a quarter of the way through her ordeal, so like this 44 divided by 4 is 11. So 11 days in. By that point, she had already, you know, had all these beatings and stuff to her face and everything, and she could not breathe through her nose due to an accumulation of blood in her nasal cavities. Her internal organs were traumatized at this point, and they started to refuse to accept water or food. So she, like, when she tried to drink, she would instantly vomit and I mean, that's going to cause her to get more dehydrated.
Oh, yeah.
Which obviously made her, the guys doing this to her, angry, and they would punish her more and beat her more for soiling the carpet. And at this point, not only from the vomiting, but also because she's done lost her ability to control her bowels. So that's going on the floor as well. And she's getting punished for that too, even though it's because of what they did to her. And there's nothing she can do. At one point, when the attackers were resting after drinking, she did try to call the police, but she was caught and she was punished. And they set her feet on fire with burning lighter fluid. They forced large bottles up her anus, and that caused more internal injuries and ugly bleeding. So she was bleeding really heftily. She had severe leg burns and badly bruised muscles that left her unable to walk 20 days in. So we're not even halfway there, like to the end, and she is unable to walk. So she couldn't handle anything with her hands anymore because her bones were smashed with weights and her fingernails were cracked. And since it was the winter, she was also forced to sleep on the balcony, exposed to cold temperatures. And again, she was forced to stay naked. So it's wintertime. She's out on the balcony, freezing.
And during the day, then, are they having her sit? Or are they making her stand? Or...
I mean, it didn't really go into that. I mean, I'm sure, you know, whatever they did to her, it just...
Because
I mean, having that many people rape her in one day, I mean, she's constantly being... raped. So obviously she's never left alone. She's always got somebody there.
So she's left on the balcony, dead of winter.
Naked
most of the time. And they're still not at this point giving her any much food or
yeah
any positive reinforcement saying, hey, you're going to be okay. Just do what we
need. No, they're just beating her, raping her, and pretty much leaving her to die out on the balcony every night.
And she's
only... that is another thing. Concrete. Remember, concrete.
Because I know earlier you said
that. Yeah, let's not go into that yet.
Okay.
But there's a movie on this called Concrete, but it was in Japanese, so I didn't watch it. I can't speak Japanese in subtitles. Just me and subtitles don't get along. We are now at 30 days in when Junko could no longer urinate properly due to damage to her internal organs and her vulva from the insertion of foreign objects and burns from the cigarettes and the lighters. Her hands and feet were damaged severely, and it took her over an hour to crawl downstairs to get to the bathroom. And her eardrums were also damaged, and her brain size by this point was reduced, which they found, you know, later on, obviously.
Well, yeah, because with all the...
But with the dehydration, your brain's going to start to...
deteriorate.
Yeah. So
with all that trauma.
At this point, she probably doesn't even understand anything that's going on.
Wow. Okay.
Which is probably a good thing. But, I mean, she still felt that pain.
Yeah.
During the 44 days when she was repeatedly tortured, beaten, and raped, she finally started begging her captors several times to just kill her and be done with her. Just kill me already. Like, there's no point in beating me and raping me anymore. Just kill me. Be done with it.
That's sad at that point, you know?
Yeah. And, of course, they didn't grant her that favor yet. On January 4th of 1989... something happened. Well, there's two things that they, you know, two ways I found it. One of them, they were playing a game, I think it was Mandala or something like that, and she won, and that made them mad, so they beat her. But then on everything else, it said that it wasn't related to her at all, and the boys were furious, so they opted to take their anger and frustration out on her. So her already mutilated body was repeatedly hit with an iron barbell until she began bleeding from her mouth. And then they lit a candle and used it to burn her face and her eyes. And again, they covered her in lighter fluid and set her on fire. They put it out just in time for it to not kill her.
Wow. So this, she probably has at least third degree burns.
Oh yeah, fourth easily, degree, easily.
And
with the amount of times
pain
that they caught her on fire easily.
Right.
They put the fire out in time for it to not kill her immediately, like during that time. And within like the next few hours after that, her body finally gave up. And she ended up dying, and like just from all the injuries that she had during that time. Because obviously we can't just have this body in our home.
Right.
And they stuffed her body into a 55-gallon drum. And this is where the concrete comes in, because she was covered in concrete in this 55-gallon drum. And they dropped her on a cement truck. And they started to think after a while that they would never be caught. Because, you know, what they did to Junko wasn't enough for them. They needed to do it some more. And so this, what from what I've heard and what I've seen, this gang rape charge that they are looking at right now happened during the time of Junko's captivity. So even when they had her, to them, she wasn't enough. So they were going around raping other people. So during Miyano's interrogation, the police mentioned an open murder investigation. Not talking about Junko, because at this point they didn't even know anything about it. They thought that she had just run away, you know, yada, yada, yada. So they weren't looking for her. Nobody was actively looking for Junko. Believing that the authorities were referring to the murder of Junko Furuta and that Ogura must have confessed to the crime, Miyano told the police where they could find her body. So this was him basically confessing to something that they weren't even, didn't even know about. So he caught himself up.
Oh, wow.
In the end, the case that the police had been referencing to was completely unrelated to Furuta. And Miyano had unwittingly turned himself in for her murder. And within days, all four of the original boys were in custody.
Good.
Now, this is where I get mad. Like, this is going to, if you are still listening to this, this is going to make you mad.
Even more mad than what I already am.
Oh, yeah. In my opinion, there is no justice for Junko. And at this point, there never will be. The Japanese court withheld the names of the four main captors who had kidnapped, tortured, raped, and murdered her because at the time they were juveniles. The journalist from the Shukan, which again, what they did was inhumane, so I fully agree.
Right.
So the people who did this to her, like the main four people, were Hiroshi Miyano, which was the one who had a crush on her and she had turned down, which started the whole thing.
Right.
Joe Ogura, Shinji Minato, and Yasushi Watanabe. Again, if I pronounced any of those wrong, I apologize. Now, Hiroshi and Joe were both 18 years old at the time of the crime, which apparently over there, that's still underage. Here it's 18. I don't know what the laws were there. Shinji was 16 years old at the time of the crime, and Yasushi was 17 at the time of this crime. All four of the perpetrators were caught and tried. However, because they were all underage when the crime was committed, they were only tried as juveniles. Eventually, they did face the sentences of adults, except that the courts, again, withheld their identities. So, I mean, they were tried as adults, but they were protected as a juvenile. Basically is what I get from that.
Okay.
Still, given the severity of the crimes, the sentences that they were handed were extremely low. And this is where I am angry.
Are we talking low, like 1 to 3 years? Less than a year?
By this point in time, right now, all four of them are out of jail, out of prison.
And this happened 36 years ago. 35, 36 years ago.
Yeah. Three of the boys served less than 8 years. The leader had initially been sentenced to 17 years in prison, but then he appealed it, to which the judge decided to give him 20 years instead of lowering his sentence because you did what you did. It was completely inhumane, and you think that you should get a lighter sentence than the light sentence you've already gotten? Here, have three more years.
Good job for that judge.
Yes.
Thank you.
The same judge also increased the punishment for two of the boys who appealed, but one of them didn't appeal, so his sentence just stayed as it was.
Okay.
Because, you know, he knew what he did was wrong, and he wasn't going to appeal it.
Right.
Either way, they're all out of jail, period. They're out of jail. Joe was released in August of 1999, and he went back to prison in July 2004 for seven more years because he beat a guy he thought was trying to lure his girlfriend away from him. Forensic examiners found sperm and pubic hair of other people on the corpse of Junko. A few more names were linked to her torture and murder, including Koichi Ihara and Tetsu Nakamura. Again, these are Japanese names. I am not Japanese, so if I mispronounce them, I apologize. So here's the thing that really gets me.
Okay.
Besides the fact that they barely got any time, her murder and most of her torture could have been prevented.
Easily.
Because the police were not alerted, only the ones that she called.
Wait, what?
Because remember, she had called and then she got caught and beat. And they called the police, you know, called him back and was like, hey, sorry, that was a misdial.
Right.
Everything's okay here. So obviously they never did anything about it. Another time that the police were alerted to her condition and what was going on there, there was a boy who was invited over to do what they were doing with her, you know, because they were inviting all their friends and they were inviting whoever. And so he went there and saw her. So he went home and told his brother what was happening because it made him sick to his stomach. You know, obviously, you know, he had a freaking heart. So it really bothered him what they were doing to her.
Right.
So the brother ended up going to their parents and the parents contacted the police. But when they showed up at the Minato residence, they were assured that the family, like by the entire family, parents included, you know, because the parents were scared of the kids. They were assured that there was no girl inside, and what they were told clearly satisfied them enough to never go back. So they didn't even see her. And then again, she called the second time. It is believed that Watanabe is the only one who has not reoffended since his release. And I agree, that is extremely tragic that nothing will ever happen. Like, that's just absolutely...
I don't know if it's the justice system is still like that to this day, or if it was just something like that in the 80s, or just...
I mean, it's just a matter of, like, how Japan is. I mean, obviously, since the 80s, our justice system has changed a lot. So, hopefully, I mean, I just feel like they should have done more.
They should have.
You know, the torture that that poor child went through. Yes, I said child. She was 17. That is a child.
Right.
But the torture that that poor child had to go through was... No child should ever go through that. Ever, for any purpose, any reason. I don't give a shit what your explanation is. No child should go through that. No human should go through what she went through.
I just wish the Concrete movie would have been English dubbed or something, because yeah, that would have been a phenomenal movie to see. Even though I don't want to see the torture she went through, but to break it down a little bit more.
Yeah.
And it's emotional as is with this, and just to be able to watch that movie would probably just be... even more intense, but...
I'd probably bawl the whole time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when I watch movies and stuff like that, I think about my kids.
Right.
What if it was my kid that had to go through this?
Exactly.
And I just get mad, and then I get angry, and then I cry, and...
Just...
I'm surprised I got through this without crying. I got tears in my eyes, and I don't know if you can see that or not, but...
It's one of those, you know?
Yeah, this one was a very, very... trying episode
it was,
for me.
It was good, though.
It was a good episode. It was just really hard.
Well, let's, on that note, then, let's go ahead and spin the wheel and see then who you will be talking about here in 2 weeks.
Okay, and while I spin the wheel, I wanted to let you guys know that we are changing next week's episode from the Chiquita Banana Serial Killer, as we're having some issues, you know, finding out any information on it, you know. So we're still going to do it eventually, but we are still trying to figure that out.
Yeah, because the research I've been doing, it's pulling up that there was some issues at one of the Chiquita banana factories.
Back yeah, in the, yeah.
What, 19?
And even I was trying to help you look, and that's all I could find, too.
Right.
So, I mean,
so
provided we, I mean, we're still looking, we're still searching all our avenues and stuff. We're talking to people that I know as truckers and stuff like that. So we're trying to figure it out, but it's just a matter of when it's
going to take some time. So if anybody else has any information on the Chiquita Banana Serial Killer, and from what I've gathered, this was a truck driver that drove around a Chiquita Banana truck.
Yeah, so. And he was going around murdering people, which you would think that we'd be able to find more information on it. But maybe it's still an open case, and maybe that's why we're not able to find it. But we'll definitely keep an eye out and see what we can find.
But I've been finding some on serial killer truckers.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I've seen all kinds of stuff on serial killer truckers. And I mean, when we bring up the cheek, every single time I was trying to find something on that, the one thing I kept finding was that it was that one guy that was on the date show. Or something.
Oh, yeah,
like that.
I forget the dude's name, but yeah, he was on the dating game.
Yeah, yeah. And I found him so many times, and I'm just like, it's not the same person.
Because right, we heard about that case, I think. Crime Junkie did.
Yeah, Crime Junkie did do a case on that.
Yeah.
So it looks like in 2 weeks we're gonna do the murder of Vero Joe Regal. Who are we talking about next week, Daniel? Because I know that you we had to spin the wheel again for you.
Yes. So we're working on Amajit Sada.
Yes.
The world's youngest serial killer.
And how old was she?
How old? He was...
Oh, he, sorry.
Yes. Yes, it is. It is a boy. He was 8 years old when it was all said and done.
Okay. And so where did that take place at?
Over in India. I don't remember where exactly at the moment, but yes, we are going to be going over to India.
Okay.
But awesome. That's all the information I'm going to give you, and I will let you know when the time comes next week. But this is another hard one as well, just for the simple matter. He was 8. He was 7 when it first started, and he was 8 when he got arrested. So, but...
That's insane.
Yeah. So it's going to be another hard one. but that's who we will be talking about next week.
Alrighty. So again, we want to remind you guys that we have our apparel places that you guys can get discounts at. So if you guys just go to reaperapparelco.com and input Dancy True Crime into the discount code box, then you'll get 10% off. But if you click our link that's in our link tree, you'll get 15% off.
Nice.
So if you go to seekjesus.com, you'll use the discount code Dancy True Crime, and that's 15% off as well. Or you can go to juststrong.com and enter cash00410 into the discount code box. You'll get 10% off. Again, I absolutely love the Just Strong hoodie I got. It is one of my favorite hoodies now.
Shoot,
I just got the Seek Jesus one, and I really like that one as well.
I love the material. I was folding laundry earlier, and I found that in
whole. The Seek Jesus hoodie?
So soft.
Yes, it is very soft.
Yeah.
I will wear it to work one day. but I absolutely love both hoodies for the awesome. Just Strong and Seek Jesus. We will be ordering a Reaper Apparel Co. hoodie here soon. We just have not gotten it done yet. And I also have another Seek Jesus one on its way. And that's the one I'm super excited about.
We get some pictures and post these.
Well, we're going to post them on our TikTok, obviously. And then we'll go from there. But for right now, that's where we're at. But we're going to. All
right.
So, is there anything else that you think we needed to add?
That is everything for this week.
Okay. So we did do something yesterday, guys, that we are super excited about. And I don't know. I know our videos aren't quite posted on YouTube yet, but they're going to be posted soon, as soon as we can. As we just bought a what, Daniel?
We got ourselves a camera.
Yes. So it's an actual camera. It's a vlogging camera. So hopefully...
Crossing fingers,
it'll fix our issues that we are having with YouTube, and hopefully our stuff will be up really soon.
It'd be very awesome if we could.
Yes. So again, once they are posted, video quality on the first episodes might not be
as good, but
as great. But since we have this new camera, hopefully we won't have any more issues or anything. So, how do you feel about that episode today, Daniel?
It was rough going through, talking about all the torture she went through. And it was just, with the Japanese and prior history, you know, you have heard about the crazy torture devices that they've used and whatnot. But this is just...
We could do a whole episode just on different torture devices.
Which I would love to do, honestly.
Yeah,
I know it's not our forte because of us talk about true crime.
Yeah, we could always do it as a bonus episode on Patreon.
But I think that would be really cool because we could do a couple parts on that. Mm-hmm. In all honesty, but yeah, that's my thoughts on that case for today. It was just
that was a really hard episode.
Yeah.
Again, next week we're talking about
the world's youngest serial killer to date.
Okay,
Mr. Sada. But that's all I'm going to give you because
that's fine.
It's a good one. It's going to affect you. We'll just leave it at that.
All right. Well, let that be your first warning about next week's episode. And then, of course, as usual, we'll put in another warning before we get into it. So,
but yeah, make sure to follow us, like us, spread the word.
Yeah. Follow, subscribe, comment, share, whatever, you know, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok.
And do you want to tell them the good news that we thought was pretty cool that we saw on Anchor yesterday?
So we're super excited because not only are we in the U.S., but we're also in the U.K., Serbia, Chile, Singapore, Philippines, Croatia, and Kenya. So we did
get...
So we just added Kenya.
That is awesome.
That is phenomenal, guys.
So thank you.
Again, let us know where you're from. We would love to know where you're from.
So hit us up on the link tree, and then you can find us anywhere on there. Send us messages on our email or direct messages on Facebook.
Absolutely. And again, if you want to suggest a case, just go to our link tree and click on suggest a case, fill out the form, and it comes directly to both of us. So.
Awesome.
But again, I'm Casey.
And I'm Daniel.
And we are Dancy True Crime. Hey guys, Casey here. I just wanted to remind you that if you want to see our research links or photos that we have, They will be posted on our Facebook page. They are posted at the same time as our podcast on Anchor and Spotify. That is every Monday at 12 p.m. Central Standard Time. So we hope to see you guys there. Hey guys, I just want to remind you to follow our Facebook page, join our group. It is Dancy True Crime. That is D-A-N-S-I, True Crime. And also, you can hear us on Anchor or Spotify. Please rate us and subscribe or follow and share our episodes. Message us on Facebook. Let us know what you think, what we could change, what we could do better. Do you have anything you want to add, babe?
No, I think you did it. You said it just perfect. So,
all right. Well, we hope you guys have a fantastic week and that you enjoy today's episode.
We'll see you next week, guys.
Bye.